Well, welcome back to another podcast. I'm Bob Furring, and I personally experienced what news directors go through on a basis. How many people, show of hands, think there's too much negative news broadcast on television every day? Yeah, I feel the same way. But here's what happens. When there's controversy and negativism, people are engaged. When things are going well, they tend to tune out. And I had a firsthand example presented to me last year about this time. We had just had an election, and there was lots of controversy and distrust in the air. Next Door was blowing up, and Kim Fuller, our board president, came in, and we got between 200 and 300 downloads of the first podcast that we did. We did one about a month ago, and things have calmed down to the point where we only got about 25 downloads. My interview with Marlena and Valeria outdrew it, as did Roland Vaughn. So, Kim, congratulations on lowering the tension level around here. But it's not good for my ratings.
Good to be back.
Welcome back. So there are things that are happening. And let's start with where we are with Cesar.
Cesar LaRocque. Okay, a story about, things are actually going very well, very smooth. I want to thank this board. Everybody's chipping in, and it's lots of stuff is happening, getting done very well. So it's very fun. Cesar LaRocque, and first of all, thank Bob Israel. Bob Israel volunteered his time and went to the settlement hearings in order to witness that, watch that, and then give comments to the DA as this proceeded. And in the end, a judge had the settlement hearing for Cesar was simple. He had to plead guilty to three felony counts, is my understanding, pay the HOA back the money, $125,000, 120 days in some type of sheriff-restricted incarceration, and to avoid going to jail. So, and he had a period of time to get this money back to us. Last Monday, Cesar came to the front gate, met two staff people, handed over a cashier's check for $125,000. The staff people took it to the bank, deposited, funds were available the next day. It was a cashier's check. So that portion of this whole fraud situation is over. I have to say, I think, and folks, I think we are lucky. And it went well for a couple of reasons. I think Associate DRM did a great job in bringing in auditors to do a very clear, complete audit so that the detectives could look at it and decide to make a case and to arrest Cesar and then to go forward. The DA went forward. They didn't sit around. And in the end, in less than a year,
it's remarkable.
I mean, in less than a year, Cesar LaRocque was arrested, found guilty, and the DA made a case for restitutions for which we got all our money back. So thank the DA. If anybody sees or hears, you should thank the DA's office. A lot of times they get grief because people don't think they're doing it. This was a phenomenal job. And I think it was also a phenomenal job on the part of Associate DRM. And I want to thank Bob Israel for going down there and keeping us informed what's going on. Because the DA did contact me through the settlement hearings, what we would like. Naturally, so we want all our money back. Pretty simple. So now we will be at the point at the next board meeting where the board will be voting as to whether to stop the investigation of this case or then to continue the investigation of this case. So it is up to the board at this point. It is possible they could vote to hire another auditor in order to investigate further, to see if further funds were due. We have to keep in mind the cost of that new audit would be a bill to the HOA. The past audit was paid for by Associate DRM. So currently our exposure financially has been very close to zero. So right now we're $125,000 ahead. If we were to, the last audit, right now the numbers are running around $60,000 is what it cost. So if we were to hire another auditor for $30,000, $40,000, $50,000, whatever it is, that would be deducted from our 125 because there's no guarantee that Associate DRM is going to say we're going to pay for another audit. Now, as it turned out, so everybody understands, Associate DRM did pay for a third-party auditor that we hired to review and go over their audit. This was a separate man in a separate company. And they came back with their comments, and they're complete. That third-party auditor is done and settled on the numbers. It was actually, in case the numbers come up so everybody is not confused, the original fraud amount that was concluded by the third-party auditor and Associates DRM, was about $123,000. But there was $3,000 that was not positive, whether it was fraud or legitimate. Nobody could technically prove it one way or the other. And to Associate DRM's credit, they stepped up here recently and agreed they would assume that's fraud. So the fraud amount went to 126. That just came out recently in the last month. So the fraud amount now is at 126. We were paid 125. The DA could not up that 125 at that time because they were already through their process. But Associate DRM has stepped up to say they will pay that fee. So at this point, if the board then decides to stop the investigation and that part's over, then we can finalize any final negotiations with Associate DRM, and then this case will be over.
Wow. The community lucked out. I mean, it was never in doubt that we were going to get paid, but to have this all handled, settled within 1 year is remarkable.
Yeah. This was a phenomenal case as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah.
And I've gotten a lot of emails from people saying thank you, a lot of emails saying, you know, some didn't believe we'd get the money back from Caesar. That does bring up the biggest question I've been asked as a result of this fraud and the fact we got the 125 back is people asking if the dues are going to go down. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I got to tell you that those two aren't necessarily related, but it is up to the board. Let me tell you, in the budgeting process, three things, I believe, if I'm doing this from memory, I'm doing this correctly, three things can happen with any surplus. One, it can be returned to the homeowners. Two, it can be put forward to the next year's operations, which can then help as far as dues. And three, it can be put to reserves. Those are the three options. I don't think anybody on the board is ready just to rush out and say we're going to refund everybody $36. Keep in mind, over the last 3 years, 4 years, our reserves dropped from 90% down to 70, 75%. So we're very aware of what's going on. Keep in mind that minimum wage is going up again, and it's going up a lot over the next 3-4 years. So we're very aware of those things.
Water's not going down.
Yeah. So we want to make sure we're healthy. I think it's important that the facility looks terrific, and I think it's important that we have stable financial economic future. That doesn't mean big swings in dues. So, yeah, if you're asking me personally, I think dues are going to go up inflation. I think we have to maintain. We need to do that.
They sure do at my other place.
So, but the board, that's a decision for the board, and everybody can, you know, chime in. We have budget meetings coming up and board meeting coming up, and let everybody know what you think about that. But that's the answer to the question. The dues are not going down tomorrow.
So I saw you had to meet the board member yesterday, and you were talking for hours. Is there any other questions that came up before we move on that I didn't think to ask?
Quite a few. Actually, things are progressing. The board voted in replacing the Santa Rosa carpet now. Let me preface this. When the embezzlement came down last year, a whole bunch of construction projects were just put on hold. We are waiting. We're going to investigate every single one. We're going to investigate the contracts that Caesar might have been associated with. So everything got halted. That's why so much of this stuff now is we can go forward. So a whole bunch of things have been planned and is coming up, which is good for everybody. The Santa Rosa carpet's now been passed that that's going to be replaced.
Now, let me ask, are you talking about in the gym area or in the office area?
The gym area, the hallway, I think the front entryway, and maybe the bistro area, if I remember correctly. Definitely the whole gym area in the hallway.
I had a resident talk to me this morning about that very thing. And he said that he's been in a lot of gyms all over, and they do not. Other gyms do not use carpeting because it tends to separate like that. They use other materials that can be replaced. So you own a gym. Do you have carpeting in yours, or are you going to investigate alternatives?
Carpeting is going to be put down. Yes, I have carpeting in my gym, which has all those machines. I have a rubberized material for free weights, which is a different application because it's on the floor all the time. Depends on the application and usage of how much. If you went into a Gold's Gym, for instance, where people are dropping weights, you need this rubber cushion padding because it would just break the floor.
Yeah.
That's not really an application here. Yeah. People aren't picking up 200 pounds and dropping barbells. In selectorized equipment and cardio equipment, most of the gyms I know of, they are carpeted. But they will replace the carpet more often. This has partly been a delay over the last couple of years. This carpet, in my opinion, should have been replaced a couple of years ago.
Now, what is the normal life of a carpet in a gym?
6 to 8 years.
This was opened in 2012, so that's 6 years
11,
ago.
So, yeah, it can wear out.
Yeah.
The other thing there, I think this time they're going to look at carpet squares. So a stronger manufacturing tile, carpet tile, so that things could be replaced if needed. Mm-hmm. Good and bad to both systems. Good and bad to both systems.
Yeah, well, and I'm sure they come up with new materials all the time.
The rubber cushion stuff that you see many times, the negative of that is off-gassing. This material is, you smell it. And you smell it for years. So it's not something, if you can avoid, to put in. I put it in a certain area, but that's only for a certain area. Mm-hmm. I would not put it in the rest of the facility because of the off-gassing function. I'd rather just change the carpet every 6-8 years if it needed it.
So my understanding is that the equipment in Santa Rosa is due to be replaced next year also. Will that all be done at the same time?
No, the carpet needs to be done right away. It's past due. So the machines will all be moved out this year to put the carpet back in. And then when we buy new equipment next year, they'll just make the exchange. And unfortunately, that's timing. But we can only do one step at a time given the LaRock case. So, yes, there's much of the equipment is on the books to be replaced next year, especially the cardio. The cardio equipment was projected to be replaced every 10 years in the original reserve study. My opinion, that's way too long, 5 years. The machines are just mechanical. They're used a lot. They break down a lot. Pretty soon your service bills outweigh the value of that machine. And then the technology changes and the upgrades, they work. Usually new equipment under warranty is good for 4 years, labor and material. And my contention is everything should work all the time. I don't like down equipment. So as the machine gets older, it's down, and that's not good. So I'm a proponent of a cardio equipment should be replaced every 5 years, not every 10. So the reserve study is being changed.
I see.
In order to accommodate.
Are there any other projects that were on hold that are now going to go forward?
Tennis court resurfacing, that's going before the board in order to resurface the Montecito tennis courts. That'll be coming up. Montecito deck, that's being going forward as far as the specification on redoing that deck. That will happen, if we're on target, in November because you have to do it in cooler weather. The Montecito spa will be redone and tiled like we did the Santa Rosa spa, rather than plaster. And then let's see what else. Then we hired the slurry work. Most expensive thing we have here, slurry and asphalt. That'll be the number one expense this place will have to take on. we hired an independent engineering company. They don't do the work. What they do is inspect all the roads, come up with a plan that says over the years, here's what needs to be done to this road in this period of time. So they have inspected all the roads. They said there was no deficiency of any install, including the last one. They said the install's fine. We now go forward with the projected schedule of when we seal coat roads on what schedule. Now, the benefit of that is they will then do the plans and specs. The plans and specs will go to bid when the time comes, and they will inspect the work as it's being done to make sure it's done correctly. Right now, there's no projection in their opinion that any seal coat should be done for approximately 2 years. Now, if that once that final report goes to board, if that's the consensus, that's a big change in the economic expense of this board for this year and next year, because there was a projection of $600,000 to $800,000 and more next year for seal coating, and if that can be delayed, now we can be a little more thrifty.
So I know nothing about this. Why do you need that seal coating done so often?
Okay, the seal coating is basically, imagine it's like paint for your house. So in the case of a road, you're putting this membrane, this waterproof membrane, over the asphalt in order to protect the asphalt. If you don't do this, your asphalt wears out. I'm sure you've seen parking lots where the asphalt's crumpling apart. Then you have to replace the asphalt. Asphalt can cost $2 a foot. Seal coating costs 12 cents a foot. So if you keep the seal coating up, you can extend the life of the asphalt maybe 40%, 50% in that zone. So it can be worthwhile to just keep it up. One is it looks nicer, striping's more often. The seal coating lasts market now for the newer materials 4 to 5 years. Slurry coating, which was the thicker material that was put down in the Phase 3 project, that is projected to last 10 by the manufacturer, by the installer. I'm not saying I agree with that number, but let's say it lasts 8. If you put on seal coating at 12 cents a foot and get 4 to 5, and the other stuff is 30 cents a foot, we can save 15 to 20% if we do seal coating. This was not the case 4 or 5 years ago. That's because of the products involved. 4 or 5 years ago, some of the seal coating products they were putting down here would only last 1 to 2 years. So it was wearing out too fast.
I see.
So there's different qualities, different, but all in all, they're going through that final report very carefully in order to then select the future. The other negative of slurry coating, which people in Phase 3 have experienced, is that if cars in warm weather turn their tires without moving, it will mark and gouge the slurry coating. You can see it everywhere. Where slurry coating has a big advantage is on a roadway, where you're not turning except moving. So Sun City Boulevard looks fine. They don't have the gouges. Outside your front driveway, you might have gouges. Tire marks, I have been asked numerous times about the tire marks. The tire marks are not caused by the slurry coat. It's not caused by the seal coating. The inspector came through, looked at everybody, and says, those tire marks, this is not the product. If you go through Phase 1 and 2, you'll see tire marks everywhere. It's done by tires and residue on the street, not by the seal coat product. Now, if you want to get lots of detail on tire marks, just search, Google search, tire marks on your driveway, and you can get a whole bunch of stuff as the fact of what kind of tires, what they mark, how often, and the nutshell is the more expensive your tire, the more it's going to mark. So if you want really cheap, hard tires, they don't mark very much. So then it depends on what you're driving on. So some people's driveways, which have epoxy coatings, it doesn't pick up the tire mark. You'll see they're clear, where concrete can pick it up.
I see.
So okay. We're moving forward with slurry coating. In the
before we, anything else before we move on? Okay. How are we doing with the voting on the government docs?
Okay, CC&Rs, everybody, please put in your ballots for CC&Rs. First thing, over the last 3 years, this has been an expense of $45,000. So if we can at least conclude this, we save future money, because if we can't and we need to try to update the docs again with another vote, well, we're going to have to spend another $15,000, $20,000. There's only four items on that ballot. The first one is probably what many consider to be the most important thing from a cost point of view, and that is the removal of Pulte from the document. The number one vote is for the removal of Pulte and for the law changes. So an example is if the law changes, we're required to follow the new law, even though our bylaws and CC&R say something different. That can be confusing to everyone, because if you look up the CC&R, it says one thing. If you go to the civil code, it'll say something else. We're obligated to follow the civil code. So what this number one vote does is it will remove Pulte, and it will then upgrade all those laws that we have to do anyway. So there's more clarity. Now, there'll be a couple of parts where Pulte's not removed. Don't let that fool you. There is one section, for instance, if a homeowner wanted to file a lawsuit against Pulte, it's done according to the CC&Rs. Pulte will not allow that to be removed from the document. So that will stay. So that's an example of where Pulte stays in, and it'll stay in forever. But a whole bunch of stuff like Pulte having so many board votes, we don't need this. It's a lot of mumbo-jumbo. So that's the first item. The second item on that ballot is term limit for committees. We're going to remove term limits for committees if everybody agrees. The third item is cumulative voting. Every other year in our board elections, we have regular voting, and then every other year we have cumulative voting. Regular voting, you're all familiar with in most elections, one man, one vote. Cumulative voting is when you can put all votes to one person. So, example, when there's three board positions open, there would then each homeowner would have three votes to cast. In regular votings, you could put one vote to one person, one vote to another person, one vote to a third person, or just put one vote to one person, but that's it. In cumulative voting, you can put all three votes to one person. If you look that up, Google search that, the purpose and reason for cumulative voting is so that a minority group, small group of people, can organize and elect somebody to the board to have a minority point of view on the board. That's what it's for. People who like that philosophy to have a minority viewpoint on the board, you will vote to keep cumulative voting. Those of you who believe the democratic process is the majority should prevail, you will be against cumulative voting. Talk to your friends, decide. You want to call me, I'll give you my personal opinion. But as a board member, I'm not recommending either
Make
way.
A decision.
Make a decision. The last item is to reduce the 90-day rental to 45 days. Currently, we have a 90-day minimum rental period. So you can't rent for less than 90 days. But we have a clause that says if the homeowner uses a management company, they can rent for any period of time they want, 1 day, 2 days. Some people don't like that clause. So the compromise was we'll lower the 90-day minimum to 45 days, but we're going to remove that clause. So if you vote in favor of 45 days, you're removing a clause that says you can use a management company for less. If you want to be a renter and rent it for less, then you want to keep the 90 days. But we do need you to vote.
The important thing is to make a decision and vote. Okay. Well, we've been going for about a half an hour here. I think the listeners are, you know, we don't want to fatigue them. Unless there's anything else that you want to cover.
A couple quick things. Covenant Committee's been started, thanks to Fira Mastow. They'll be starting this month, the new Covenants Committee, which is made up of residents, so that people who go before a covenants hearing, as far as citations, they then have the right to appeal to board after that. That's now starting and in place. First budget meetings in August. If you got opinions on how your money's going to be spent, let us know. Next board meeting. Here's an issue that could be very, very important to all of us. The water company is going to be doing a presentation for approximately 30 to 45 minutes at the next board meeting. This has to do with how the flood control is going to work, and it's coming through our property. That's what's on the books.
Very interesting.
So that flood control coming right down through the North Channel, through that golf course, is going to be an issue. So they're talking about how that's going to be rerouted and how it's coming down. So that might be, if you don't make the board meeting, definitely watch the video to see what the water company says about this plan.
Okay. Well, I'm going to leave some things so I can invite you back and get updates on all this stuff. So for the audience, if you enjoyed this, please tell somebody. This is the way we're growing our audience, is word of mouth. Kim, thanks so much for coming in. Until next time, we're going to say bye-bye to both you and the audience.
Thanks very much.